Hello, and welcome to The Sound of Economics, the podcast from Bruegel, the Brussels-based economic think tank. I'm your host, Rebecca Christie, and I'm joined today with Bruegel's foremost digital scholars, Bertsen Martens and Mario Marinello. We are going to talk about the European Commission's digital omnibus legislation and the broader outlook for the EU and technology and government heading into 2026. Mario, can you tell us about this giant omnibus package that was introduced in late 2025 and what it means?
Thank you, Rebecca. Yeah, for sure. I mean, with pleasure. So the digital omnibus and the AI omnibus, and they are two different pieces, are part of what the Commission deceptively, in my view, calls a simplification strategy. The idea is to alleviate the regulatory burden that encumber companies in Europe, in particular in the digital economy. Now, I say simplification is a deceptive term because, you know, the term nudges you into believing that, these changes that the Commission proposes are harmless, that there are just efficiency gains to grab, like, you know, reducing useless paperwork for companies, and that there is no substantive effects on, for example, the protection of fundamental rights. But as we will probably see during our discussion on the digital omnibus, that is really not true. I think the proposal of the Commission has significant effects in terms of, you know, deregulation. So I think, you know, just to make things clear, I think the Commission should refer to this as a deregulatory, you know, proposal. The idea is to cut on obligations for digital companies and in particular for AI providers, to boost the European competitiveness in AI, since we assume that, and I think it's a fair assumption, the European economy is lagging behind, especially in the development of AI, more than with adoption. And to do that, the omnibus says, I mean, in my view, kind of two groups of proposals. So the first one is what I would define as truly simplificatory measures. So these are things like, you know, taking duplications, repealing laws that were superseded by other laws later on. Like, for example, there is a regulation which is called the Platform to Business, a regulation that has been superseded by the DMA. Now, let's not get too much into the acronyms because otherwise we would lose all the audience. But somehow there is definitely a simplificatory effort. There is the idea of having a single entry point through which entities can simultaneously fulfill their reporting of incidents, like cyber incidents. There is the idea that some regulatory privileges that are now enjoyed by small companies can be extended to slightly bigger companies, the so-called mid-caps, like, for example, an easier access to AI sandboxes, so on and so forth. So there are things that are actually welcome and they are truly simplificatory. But there is also another group of proposals, which I find extremely worrisome. And because they are indeed geared towards the narrowing the scope of protection of personal data in order to give, let's say, more leverage to AI companies to use data for the development of their AI systems. So here you have things like, for example, pseudonymized data that with the GDPR would normally be considered personal, and therefore they would be subject to the protection of the GDPR. The omnibus proposes to change that and consider them as personal only to the extent that the entity which processes them cannot re-identify them. But of course, that doesn't cover the case in which another entity would be able to re-identify them. So, I mean, that's one example. Another example is, you know, the fact that now personal data can be used for training for the operation of AI system if the provider says that they do that for a legitimate interest. But of course, legitimate interest is a fuzzy concept. So, again, I mean, like, you know, you're trying to give more leeway to AI companies, shifting the responsibility on them to say, well, this is actually okay. But this, of course, put at risk the fundamental rights, I think, like the protection of privacy in this case, and also creates more uncertainty because we are not really sure, even the companies themselves might be not really sure whether what they're doing is should be considered legal or not.
Bertin, in your past work, you have had a lot to say about how the EU regulates data, and you have criticized the EU for possibly overreaching in the design of its AI and other regulations. So where does this new effort come in? How do you see it?
Thank you, Rebecca, and thank you for inviting me on this podcast. Indeed, I think this data, digital omnibus and the AI omnibus are very interesting pieces of EU regulation that try to simplify the rather fragmented EU regulatory landscape. And this is particularly the case in data, where we had over the last couple of years many new data regulations coming up, and they created a sort of a jungle of EU data regulations that was very hard to manage for companies and so created really a number of legal obstacles or legal uncertainty for many firms. And so, as Mario already suggested, I think this pruning of the existing data regulatory landscape and repealing a number of data regulations, taking the remaining relevant provisions in these old regulations, consolidating them into one regulation, namely the Data Act. So I think this is a good way forward. And there was a lot of superficial and totally unnecessary regulation that has been abandoned. On the other hand, I think consolidating in the Data Act is fine, but the Data Act itself still has a number of important shortcomings, which have not been addressed by the data, by the digital omnibus. For example, the Data Act creates the special category of product data. And what is product data? This is still not entirely clear. The Data Act tries to define this, but in principle, this applies to internet-connected products, that devices that generate data and then transmit them over the internet to servers somewhere in the world. But why product data? Why all digital data or stored on a physical hardware product? And so some categories of hardware products are singled out in this Data Act, and others are left out. So this again creates a fragmentation in the data regulation landscape in the EU that is not very helpful. Also, the Data Act gives industry manufacturers of these products, of these digitally connected devices, it gives them exclusive control over who the data can be transferred to and at what price these data can be transferred to. This means that if I buy a Fitbit, for example, and I want to transfer the data from that Fitbit to another third party, I may have to pay a price for that. I already paid for the Fitbit and the software in it. Why should I pay again for transferring these data to another firm? This would be equivalent of Microsoft on its Excel spreadsheets saying, well, you can use the spreadsheet, but once you do the computations and I want to transfer my computations to Rebecca, I have to pay for that. And this would be ridiculous. This is a big problem, I think, in the Data Act. The digital omnibus also talks a lot about creating data spaces, big pools of data in different sectors, which can then be used for training AI models. I think that's a good thing, but this initiative was already taken several years ago by the Commission. It has launched several initiatives, several sectoral data spaces by now. I think there are good examples and there are bad examples. The good example, for example, is the European health data space, where lots of health data are pooled together and can be used for analysis, for discovering new medicines, new treatments, for finally getting a good view of the impact and the efficiency of existing medicines, and so on. I think the European health data space ticks all the boxes. I think it's a very good regulatory proposal. But on the other extreme, you have the common agricultural data space, which is not being translated in a regulation yet, but there are several proposals circulating, that goes the opposite way and gives exclusive control over these data pools to farmers, which I find a bit contradictory, because taking into account that we already have the common agricultural policy, where there are huge data sets already on the use of agricultural land, for example, which member states are reluctant to share with the Commission in many cases. And now we're going to create a separate data pool for farm data, which will be controlled by farmers. So who's going to have access to this? I don't think this is a good solution. I think a wider and more fundamental problem in EU data regulation is the lack of clarity, zigzagging between different solutions and different regulations without a clear and consistent pathway on how to use the data in order to use data as a production factor and make efficient use of that production factor. And data can then be used in a pool and can be accessible to many parties. Let me finish by saying one more thing on the AI omnibus. I think that's also an important issue there. As Barry mentioned, the AI omnibus has some provisions that make it easier to access personal data so that this can be used for model training. My assessment is somewhat different from Mario's because I think this is a good step forward. These are data that users of social media platforms have already put with their own consent in the public space. They are available to anybody, including to AI model trainers. We need access to these data, to these social media platform data for AI model training, because AI models are running out of data. And this is especially the case in small language communities. And we have several of those in the EU, small language groups that do not generate enough edited language data in their own language to properly train these AI models. By opening access to social media platforms, this will enormously increase the supply of data, and I think that that is a good way forward. One last remark on the AI omnibus. The AI omnibus has a very nice provision, which I like very much. It says the AI office, the European Commission's AI office, should create a regulatory sandbox where AI developers and deployers can start experimenting with different models, different features, new services, and so on. But why limit this? Why not make a sort of general provision for sandboxing AI model development and deployment in the EU? Create a sort of 28 regime for AI development and deployment in the EU. And I think we should expand that provision in the AI omnibus. That would be really a way forward for the EU.
Thank you both so much for this introduction. I'm struck listening to you that in addition to the very welcome efforts to simplify some of this stuff, the EU really seems to be focusing on trying to figure out what's personal data and what data belongs to businesses. And then once it's done that, really giving the businesses more control over how to use the data, if I can oversimplify. In the past, EU digital regulation has focused on making sure businesses have to share with each other, interoperability, in some cases forced interoperability in ways that technical experts have found excessive, but that the EU has said is necessary for free competition. Is it your sense that there is a shift away from all of this interoperability and forcing businesses to give each other access to their data and more just about trying to decide, okay, what's an individual piece of information that you should control and what's out there in the digital private innovation sphere that they can innovate with? I mean, is that one way to look at this, Bertin?
Thank you for this question, Rebecca. This really goes to the heart, in my view, of EU data regulation. As I was saying before, the EU is zigzagging, sometimes giving control to this party, sometimes more to another party, and sometimes designing an altogether new regime. What is important about digital data is that they are what economists call non-rival. They can be reused by many parties at the same time without affecting the original functionality and the purpose for which the data were collected. And so we should try to promote this. If we want to make efficient use of data as a production factor, we should get the widest possible access to all the data that we have, subject, of course, to some controls. And so the GDPR in the EU does that very well, I think. It doesn't recognize ownership rights on personal data. It says data subjects who produce the data have some rights of accessing and deleting and transferring their data, But the firms that collected the data also have some rights to use them. And so this is a more balanced approach. That balance got lost somewhat in the Data Act. And that balance needs to be reviewed. And I think the AI Act goes the right to AI Omnibus goes the right direction for AI applications, because we need much more access to huge pools of data if we want to train more AI models, especially great sovereign AI models in the EU with access to local language data pools. And so this is, in my view, a good step forward.
Mario, I know we've had a lot of things go by. I'd love to hear your thoughts on the competition element of this. And then if you want to respond to anything we've said so far, I'd love to hear that too.
Oh, indeed. I mean, there are so many things to say. First of all, I tend to agree very much with Bertin. The problem lies somewhere elsewhere. I mean, like, you know, the perception that we have that by just deregulating, we would sort out the competitiveness issue. It's wrong. I mean, I think, you know, we need to regulate better. I mean, like, and, you know, focus on data markets, I think would be, you know, and improving the Data Act would be probably a way to go. You know, it strikes me the fact that, you know, the commission ended up in a paradox. Companies say they don't invest in digital technologies, mostly not because of regulation, but because of uncertainty. That's the main concern that they have. And the omnibus actually is creating more uncertainty. So it's a bit weird. No? If you look, for example, at the enforcement of the AI Act, of course, there is an issue, which is the industry hasn't developed yet, you know, the standards for to show compliance. So there are issues out there. And so the commission has proposed to postpone the enforcement of the AI rules for high-risk AI systems from August 2026 to December 2027. But this created even more uncertainty because, first of all, it's not sure that this is going to happen because the omnibus has to be adopted and it takes quite a bit of time before the EU legislator would adopt such a controversial measure. And second, the commission itself says that if meanwhile the industry will have developed those standards to show compliance, well then, I mean, it might anticipate the date of entry into force of the AI Act, which is now supposed to be, so for a high-risk AI system, which is now supposed to be December 2027. So you see, I mean, like, you know, this is another source of uncertainty. So this is like, you know, if you put it in the big picture, it seems to me that the commission has given itself a kind of a sense of urgency, maybe pushed by the Draghi wave, which, of course, I mean, is underlying certain issues that need to be addressed. Okay, we need to improve our competitiveness. I mean, we all agree on that. But, you know, the commission kind of created this sense of anxiety that pushed it to rush into taking decisions without having a full deep assessment. There is no impact assessment, for example, accompanying these proposals, all the omnibus. And then ended up doing things that are actually shooting in the foot, you know, going against what we would like to have. So addressing the real issues. That's, for me, is very concerning. And I mean, along the lines of what Bertin was saying, I mean, I think if you want to increase competitiveness, you should focus on the real issues. You know, uncertainty is one, access to skills, you know, access to capital. There are many things out there that you can make, which are probably much more relevant for competitiveness than the regulating or, I mean, on this I disagree with Bertin, than, you know, reducing the scope of protection of personal data. Specifically, I mean, Bertin, on this thing on access to language. Well, I mean, you can access personal data. The thing is, though, that, I mean, like, you should have the consent of people, you know. So what is now happening is with the omnibus is that de facto companies can use personal data without the consent because they are narrowing down the scope of protection of the GDPR. So, I mean, if, you know, if an AI company can say, it can claim that it's a legitimate interest to use this data, I mean, like they will be able to use it. Now, the thing, I mean, for me is that because, of course, I mean, the use of personal data might benefit the companies for sure. I mean, like, you know, but it can also generate some risks. It can generate risk for discrimination, for example. And I think I'm quite proud of the level of protection that we have here in Europe to prevent that type of risk. I'm not sure why we should give up that that protection and try to mimicking what the US are doing. I don't think this is the right way to become independent. This is the right way to become exactly like those you want to get emancipated from. So, yeah, I mean, I'm really shocked by the course of action.
Mario,
you are not.
Thank you so much for that. The next part of our podcast, I really wanted to talk about the geopolitical dimension of all of this, the European frustration that these giant American companies dominate the tech conversation, and Europe's need to work with a lot of these companies on everything from search and social media to, you know, chips and cloud computing and things like that. Bertin.
Yeah, the geopolitical dimension. It's obvious that in the EU, in terms of AI, we are running far behind the US and China. We claim to have some domestically produced models like Mistral, for example, but even the Mistral model has not been trained in the EU. It was trained on US infrastructure because the infrastructure did not exist in the EU. So gradually, we are now in the process of catching up in infrastructure terms. Over the next year, we'll be able to train more models in the EU. And that's a good way forward. But these models need access to data. The AI Act has imposed a very precautionary regime on AI development. Precautionary in terms of copyright, precautionary in terms of access to personal data under the GDPR, precautionary in terms of the risks that we are allowed to run in the EU. A technology that is very fast evolving like AI, and that's still in the beginning phases of where, and nobody knows where it will be a couple of years down the road. Making regulations is very difficult. The regulatory process itself, even for this AI omnibus, will take a year or two. And as Mario said, we have another sort of guidelines and new rules that will be and technical standards that will be introduced. In the meantime, we have additional regulatory uncertainty, and that's not a good thing. So that's why I argued in favor of this sandbox where model developers can experiment. If we don't do these things, we'll get further behind. And we already run that risk with our regulatory AI approach in the AI Act. We need to have access to the social media data, in my view, if we want to catch up a little bit with the US, as I said, also in small language communities. I disagree that I agree that users should give their consent, but they already give their consent on publicly available social media data that they can be used. So consent is given. And the legitimate use that the AI omnibus finally crystallizes in the revised GDPR or proposes to crystallize in the revised GDPR, we have had a debate for the last 2 years on this. 27 GDPR authorities in the EU have discussed among themselves, could not come to an agreement. Even the European Data Protection Supervisory Board could not come to an agreement on that. So it's time that the AI omnibus finally puts this issue to rest. And so I think that is a good way forward to help us catch up maybe a little bit with the rest of the world.
Yeah. Mario, what do you think?
No, I tend to disagree with Bertin. I mean, that's, you know, we all see it in the same way, which is also very interesting. I mean, you know, for us, I mean, like I learned a lot of things when I speak with Bertin. It's nice to have a debate. No, I think it's debatable to start with whether reducing protection would improve productivity. This is a rather controversial issue in the literature. You can find papers that say, look, if you increase privacy protection, this would increase concentration in the market. No, Bertrand Meneke knows this literature very well. This would decrease total value produced. But you also have a lot of papers. There is a rich literature showing that if you increase protection, you have more trust, you have more demand therefore, I mean, like of digital services, then therefore you also have more production of data. You have more innovation, which goes in a certain direction, of course, an effort, for example, to have more privacy-oriented technologies and so on and so forth. So it's debatable. If you reduce protection, I mean, like you will increase productivity, first of all. Second, there is also, you know, this in absolute terms, but also there is a relative dimension that we need to consider here. Here we are talking about catching up. Here we are talking about competitiveness, which is a relative term, if you want. No, you become more competitive compared to whom? Say, for example, the US. But in this case, it's pretty obvious that, you know, the big US companies will benefit so much from the omnibus proposals. And simply because they already have a grip on users. You say, I mean, like, these are public data. Yes, maybe on Meta, on Facebook. I mean, so who is going to benefit? The European companies? Maybe, yes, but certainly also Meta. So, and this applies to all big platforms. So, I mean, I'm not sure how this, provided that you would have this absolute gain in productivity, which I'm not sure about, but let's assume that you would have, I'm not sure this would actually help shrinking the relative gap that we have. It would not increase our competitiveness if it benefits, you know, American companies perhaps even more than it benefits European companies. And that's my worry. And the other thing is, you know, the thing with enforcement, right? You mentioned competition. Yes, the problem is that what we see is that it's not only having the right rules, it's about applying them. And there is a lot of hesitation in these days in Brussels concerning applying the rules. I mean, back in December, we had the fine to X, which I think was honestly, I mean, sparked a lot of debate, controversy, and the retaliation by Musk. I mean, like, things that are, I think, were a bit unthinkable up until recently. But if you look at it, I mean, it took like 2 years, more than 2 years to get to a sanction to X. And ultimately, the fine is very small, honestly. I mean, like, if you consider the whole wealth of the owner of X, right? So it tells you something. I mean, you might have the rules, but if you're not able to enforce them, how are we supposed to create more competition in the market? How are we supposed to create more trust, you know, in the use of data? It doesn't work like that. I don't think we can increase our competitiveness if we are not able to have like enough confidence that the rules will be applied as they should. And I think this is the major challenge that we are facing right now in terms of the geopolitical dimension.
I appreciate both of those answers because they show the tough spot that the EU is in, particularly when it comes to American tech. On the one hand, EU companies like Mistral definitely benefit from their ability to work in a transatlantic way and to bring ideas and innovation to their efforts in Europe. On the other hand, a lot of the EU regulation seems either to catch the American companies in its regulation in the first pass or to make life easier for them if it's deregulation. And that's weird for Europe's own regulation to be so focused on companies that are outside. Mario, yes.
No, I agree with that. And in fact, enforcement is becoming increasingly political is a big problem, both on the side of, you know, having too little enforcement and on the side of having too much enforcement, right? We are risking over-enforcing and under-enforcing, both kind of things. Now, enforcement should be just what it is. I mean, like, and of course, I mean, like you, Rebecca, you're saying, okay, all these regulations apply to big tech. Yes, but it's also true they are the ones who have the power. So, and regulation tend, obviously, to constrain those who have power. Those who don't have power, you know, don't need to be constrained because they cannot do harm. So, but we need to do it smartly. So I agree with you. I mean, like, I certainly there is a potential tendency to become protectionists. And that's why we should actually leave enforcement alone. We should not exert pressure on the enforcers to go either way. But of course, this is not happening from within Europe and from, of course, the other side of the Atlantic.
Bertin, how do you think the EU is doing on enforcement?
Well, as Mario said, sometimes a bit under-enforcing, sometimes a bit over-enforcing. But I wanted to come back to this point of EU versus US. I don't think we should picture this in these black and white terms so much. Big tech US companies, they are big because they have managed to make very well a good use of digital technology. And they become big because they attract many users, because they offer services and features that are attractive to users. And so they create big data pools because they collect data from many users, many transactions, many interactions. And that gives them this additional productivity jolt, a jump, using data as a production factor. And they also work in Europe, and they also help European companies and European consumers. So we should not try to picture them so much as these big monsters that are threatening us. They also help us a lot, and we should collaborate more with these companies. Of course, when they make misuse of their dominant position, when they exploit their dominant position, then we should intervene, and that's what the Digital Markets Act is for. Whether that implementation is balanced, there are lots of debates and discussions around this, and the Commission is still looking step by step, trying to find its way in the implementation of the Digital Markets Act. And so, yeah, it should go carefully in that. And so also in the DSA, or this, as we mentioned, this X fine of just 120 million is very small. And so that's, I see it as an exploratory step towards better enforcement, better implementation of that regulation. So let's take it step by step and see how that works.
And generally speaking, does the omnibus, in your view, change the enforcement calculus, or it just changes the conditions for data use?
On the digital omnibus, on the data part, changes not much, I think, in the rules, except for this GDPR provision. It's mostly a question of repealing some existing regulation and consolidating that into the data act. But for the GDPR, yes, it changes something, but I don't think it's very fundamental. What is important there is that the digital omnibus talks about these browser extensions that would give consumers a tool to better manage the use of their private data and to give their consent or reject that consent. I think that is highly necessary. And Mario and I have actually been working on a project in Renault on this. And so that's a good way forward, I think. But yeah, there are many other issues around the GDPR where fundamental issues that if we give our consent or we reject consent for use of our data, does it benefit us as consumers? We don't know. If we allow our data to be used, does that benefit us or is it used against us? If we reject consent, does that work to our advantage or disadvantage? We simply have no way of knowing it. And so this is a fundamental issue that economists, unfortunately, have not solved yet. And we need to work much more on that.
Yeah, I totally agree with what Bertin just said. I mean, of course, we're working together on this. So, I mean, and I think, overcoming the issues with consent, I mean, also the bounded rationality, so the limits to our rationality and the privacy paradox, so to speak, it's really something that should be on top of our list. I wanted just to mention something, though, in response to your question on the effect of the omnibus on enforcement. There is one provision in the AI omnibus. I mean, we commonly refer to it as a digital omnibus, but there are two different packages. So on the proposal to change the AI Act, there is one bit that I also find very worrisome, which concerns the removal of the obligation of providers of high-risk systems, AI systems that the AI Act consider by default high-risk, to register those systems in a public database, which is, open to anybody to be consulted, if the provider of the AI system considers that it is not high risk. Okay, so it's a little bit complicated, but the idea is that in the AI Act, a provider of a high risk system could say, well, you know, I mean, like, I don't think this is really high risk. It can make a self-assessment for that and say, you know, this should not be subject to the rules, should be not subject to the enforcement of the AI Act for the rules of a high risk system. That was already in the AI Act. But before, anyway, this company had the obligation to register it in a public database. So there was, you know, the possibility of having some kind of external scrutiny if that self-assessment was good or not. Now, with the omnibus, that obligation is removed. Okay, I think this is more intelligible. I mean, okay, but you see, I mean, like, so in a certain way, the digital omnibus is also reducing the scope of enforcement. Because, I mean, like, you know, it's easier for companies to claim that their systems do not qualify. They are not in the scope of the obligations, the more intense obligations of the AI Act.
It's so interesting that it often comes down to which companies are subject to the rule rather than how the rule itself works. This is something we see in EU efforts as well. We're heading into the last section of our podcast now, and I'd love to get some thoughts from each of you about the path forward for this digital omnibus. It will need to be debated by member states and by the European Parliament, and then they will need to find an agreement in consultation with the Commission. We've seen in 2025 that the Parliament is very divided politically and very much trying to figure out whether it's going to be a center-right and right-right alliance or a traditional center-right right and center-left alliance? What are the roles of other parties like the Greens? I'd be interested from both of you in getting a sense of the prospects for the digital omnibus and the political outlook going forward.
You're right, Rebecca, to point out that this is not going to be an easy ride for the omnibus in the Parliament, and perhaps not even in the Council, because there are several provisions that will appeal to either center-left or to the center-right, and that tension is there now. The center and the Parliament is split, and that is something that makes legislating more difficult in the Parliament. Well, it's impossible to predict, I think, at this stage what the outcome of this process is going to be. What I'm worried about is that this is going to be delayed in the Parliament for at least a year or so, possibly even more. And then the Commission will have to come up with the guidelines that it promised in the omnibus. And so before we know, we are at least 2 years, if not further down the road. Nobody knows today how AI will look 2 years down the road. We have some inklings there. We know the agentic AI will come up very fast. The AI Act doesn't even talk about agentic AI because that word does not exist when the AI Act was designed. The omnibus doesn't talk about it because it doesn't know what to say on this. And so I'm afraid that by the time all this is settled in the Parliament, it will be passé. It will be overtaken by the technology. Technology goes much faster. And this is a fundamental problem that we have today in the digital sphere, is that the technology evolves much faster than the regulators can make their regulations. So, and that, in my view, should make Europe think about going for a less precautionary approach and more allowing experimenting in sandboxes with all these technologies. So, yeah, I agree with Mario. There are many regulatory uncertainties, legal uncertainties around this AI Act that will linger on for years to come. And that's not good for the investment climate in Europe.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to agree with Bertin, really. That's the main problem. There's going to be a lot of uncertainty. This is going to be super controversial. It's hard to predict. What is obviously very predictable is that this will take time and that the outcome will be uncertain until the very last second. So again, I mean, I don't think the Commission played it well, especially with the postponement of the enforcement. I think packaging it together with the overall proposal was a bit sloppy, I would say, from this side.
Are there any new tech initiatives that are coming down the pike as well for 2026?
Yeah, there is the AI and Cloud Act, which hopefully is going to address some of the issues that will arise also in the podcast. So taking more, as Bertin said, I mean, like taking more example from the successful, you know, cases like the health data space. I think, you know, I don't know really what's going to be in this act, but there is a lot of expectations around it. Bertin, maybe you know more about.
Well, in the data union strategy communication that accompanied the omnibuses, there was some explanation about what would be in those, including in the AI and Cloud Act. But my impression from reading that is that it's mostly about spending money on more infrastructure, more skills training, and that sort of thing. It's not fundamentally going to regulate or open the market as such. I don't see that. What I think is an interesting proposal, though, in this whole package that came out now is the digital wallet for companies. And so creating a digital identity for companies together with the digital identity, the e-identity for individuals, for natural persons. I think this lays the foundation stones for a more trustworthy internet where you can know whom you're talking to, whom you're dealing to when you do a transaction on the internet. For sure, people will come up with new technologies that try to circumvent that and overcome that, but at least it's a good step. And so I think this opens up a possibility for Europe to create its own large platforms. Something the US does not have is an identity platform. And especially if we would create that identity platform, similar to what India has done with the Aadhaar platform, for example, and that identity platform is used to build additional services on top. You get financial services, banking services, payment services, but there are many other things that you can build on top of that platform. And so identity is the entry gate through which you control access to that platform. And that creates an opportunity for Europe to create its own platform and have some countervailing power to these big US platforms that now regulate our identity access. And I think we should take that into our own hands, especially when we would combine this in future with the central bank digital currency, the digital euro, add these financial services on top of that identity platform. I think that would be a very powerful future European platform on which we can build a number of other online services.
The digital euro is a really interesting project. We did a successful podcast in 2025 with ECB on that for listeners who want to learn more about it. Mario, do you agree that this digital wallet might be a European innovation? Yeah?
Totally. I mean, like, yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, I share. I mean, on this, we are 100% aligned with that.
Any last thoughts or last predictions as we bring this to a close?
Yeah, just one thought. Europe should heed Mario Draghi's message that we need to accelerate our productivity growth, especially in digital. I think it will take more than the digital omnibus and the AI omnibus to achieve that. These two omnibuses may do a marginal improvement in that, but it's not a fundamental step. And so we need to go much further, and Europe needs to get its act together on digital services to take a leap forward in that and not stay put where we are.
So on my side, I think Draghi should be heard, but Draghi cannot substitute a thorough assessment of what we are doing. And the Commission should also come up with a more structured long-term strategy. At the moment, it feels like, you know, there is this sense of rushing through, as I said at the beginning of the podcast. And I think it is based on the assumption that if we would be able to kind of replicate what the US are doing, like, you know, to become as successful as they are, for example, in the development of AI, then later on, we would be able to be, you know, to dictate the conditions of the market somehow, right? To protect our values, as Draghi has put it. Like in 2050, if we are not competitive enough, we won't be able to protect our values. Well, I think you cannot postpone the question. You cannot say, okay, let's just cut on protections today, become competitive, and then in 2050 we will be able to, you know, to tame the potential issues that are coming up with, for example, with artificial intelligence. You cannot do that because AI is becoming, and technology in general, the digital technologies are becoming like an infrastructure of our society. And so one, you know, one they become so well ingrained in our society, in our economy, it's going to be impossible to change it. So, you know, you need to ask today what you want, the kind of society you want to live in, and then take your decisions. You know, and tailor your strategy, whether it is simplification of the regulation, around that. Now, the Commission doesn't have that. And I find this extremely worrisome. And one way to do that is to not only to focus on quantitative metrics and say, okay, we are lagging behind in investment. We are lagging behind on the number of data centers. We are lagging behind on how big our companies and so forth. But to actually ask yourself qualitative questions: what kind of innovation you want? What is the purpose of the innovation that you want to have in Europe? So these kind of questions are not there, because there is just the impulse of trying to fill the gap with the US. And I think this is very dangerous. And I hope that, with the new year now just started, the Commission will change its attitude and realize that it doesn't hurt anybody if they would stop thinking a little bit instead of just rushing through with, the simplification of the regulation strategy.
I totally agree with Mario.
Yeah, your last comments really encapsulate the entire EU tech debate, and I hope we take that with us going forward. You've been listening today to The Sound of Economics, the podcast from Bruegel. All of Mario's and Bertin's amazing reports, along with our colleagues like Fiona Scott-Morton, their reports on all of the EU digital regulation can be found on our website for free, Bruegel.org. This podcast is on all of your favorite podcast channels. You've been listening to me, your host, Rebecca Christie, with Bruegel's Mario Marinello and Bertin Martens. We thank you so much for joining us. See you next time.